Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen and ladies, welcome back to another fabulous edition of Master of the Universe Horror Podcast, starring Joey Cage and co-starring Gabe the Man Beast, aka G-Money, and of course your humble abode,
the quesadilla, Max. The quesadilla king, the buffalo quesadilla himself.
Motherfucker to the max, Chris Karam.
How are those quesadillas tonight, Rosie?
Oh. Sorry. Babe, he wants to know how the quesadillas were.
Fantastic.
I don't believe it. I think she's just trying to put you over, dude, but I got to try for myself. But anyway, what are we talking about tonight, Chris?
We will be talking about the latest edition of Conjuring, a.k.a. Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, starring Patrick Wilson.
Via Farmiga and a bunch of other motherfuckers. So
Patrick Wilson's the only one that matters.
He's the only one that gets over, dude. So, Gabe, dude, any horror news? Dude, I know we they're making like a, what was it? What's that fucking movie called? I tagged you in it earlier today. I forgot the name. It's Demonic Toys, right? That's what it was. They're making like a baby Oopsie Daisy, dude.
Yeah, they got that in the works too. Full Moon Productions. Was it the Charles Band?
Yeah,
he makes all those neat movies. A Puppet Master, Demonic Toys. You know, that's pretty cool. So yeah, there's that. That one's coming out. That's pretty neat. And then they, I don't know if y'all saw. I know y'all saw this because I ended up sending it to you. I've been seeing a lot of little mixed reviews on this. I really just wanted to ask your opinion about this. But The Munsters is coming back as a movie.
Yes.
But the person who's doing it is Rob Zombie.
Yes, I saw that.
Well, my opinion is I'm one of those people that I'm not gonna pull a Jason and just say, oh, Rob Zombie, fuck him. You know, you know, I'm one of those dudes that maybe early on, because I didn't watch a lot of the early films that he did, or like, not the early, but the first two or whatever. And then I saw Halloween and I was like, I didn't like these movies. Maybe I'll like them now. I haven't seen them in a while, but I went back to see, what's it called? The Devil or House of a Thousand Corpses, right? I think it's the one. And I really liked that movie. I saw it like a year ago. I was like, that's pretty cool. And all this other shit I really wasn't into, so I'm interested because I know he's, like, really over the top, and he's, like, you know, the foul mouth. That's, like, his gimmick for movies, and, you know, I'd like to – because the monsters, I mean, you know, the Munsters, they're kind of, like – either it's going to be – you know, I don't think he's going to make it the way you would think the Munsters, you know, would be put to film. So it's – I mean, I'll give it a shot, dude. You know, fuck it. I'm not, like – super excited, but because it's him, but I love the Munsters, so I'm like, well, fuck it, let's see what they got. You know, is grandpa gonna go fuck you, Herman? You know, waiting for that shit.
I mean the thing is, like, for me, I saw that, and I know Rob Zombie usually does pretty good work, but the thing is, or as good as you can do in modern horror, he does all right. But the thing is, like, right away I see Munsters and that eye roll turn off. Oh my god, here's that dopey 60s sitcom, you know. But I would possibly be willing to give it a chance.
What about you, Gabe?
Oh, I'm definitely I'm looking forward to that. I like Rob Zombie's films. They're just kind of weird, especially like the whole House of a Thousand Corpses. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I watched that like constantly. It's like, I had so many lines, like, memorized just because I ended up, like, watching it so much. It was just fun and weird. It's like a, to me, it's like a stoners type of movie. I mean, you go, you get high, you get really drunk or something, and you just go and watch that movie, and you're just, like, too busy laughing, like, at some of the ridiculous things that are in it. And I think, like, what you all are saying, that the old Munsters... I used to watch the old show with my mom a lot. That was like one of her favorite shows, along with like Dick Van Dyke and I Love Lucy, things like that. Mary Lee Tyler Moore. But this one in particular, you know, it's really neat. It had a good sense of comedy. It was just funny. And, you know, like, basically, you know, it's the monster horror family that lives in a suburban, you know, normal neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, they go while everyone is walking their dog. The comedy is that the son, who happens to be a werewolf, happens to walk his dragon, you know, down the block. And, you know, everybody thinks that's weird, but to them, the monsters, they think everybody else is weird. It's, you know, it had its funny sense of comedy. It was good for that time. And now that Rob Zombie, you know, given his little past history of movies, you know, how dark and kind of gritty, or even some of the kind of weird, trippy stuff that he has in there, for him to go ahead and do something like the monsters, I think we're all expecting for him to do something real dark and gritty like that. That he's not going to bring back like the old type of comedy, like the way that old show was, which I'm fine with. Like, if I want that old sense of comedy, I might as well just watch the old stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, if you like that shit, well, there it's there for you. You know,
that's why it's already there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Is like I really like. I loved his. House of a Thousand Corpses. Like, I wasn't into the Halloween films, and I haven't sat there and watched all of like Devil's Rejects, but I loved that film. You know, House of a Thousand Corpses. Like, it was just really like over the top and weird, and it's an awesome Halloween movie. We'll probably do it during Halloween or once we get close to it or whenever the fuck. But yeah, that's one that I definitely dig. But yeah, I mean, for the people that love the old school monsters, well, you know, or monsters, keep on saying monsters, you know, you can just watch all those shows. I love the song Chris is Trashing It, dude, but that's my jam, dude. I might start off this one with that. But The Conjuring 3, dude, another Conjuring film, but, you know, about the Warrens, and, you know, based off of a true story about someone getting possessed and killing their fucking landlord, dude. Stop me if you heard that one before. But I've been waiting for this film for a long time, and of course with COVID, and like typically films will get delayed, you know, because of one thing or another, but then COVID happened, and it was pissing me off, dude, because I think originally it probably would have came out in like 2019-ish, or no, I'm wrong, but it was supposed to come out early, but it kept on getting delayed because of course, you know, delays and then COVID, so... I was waiting for it, and it came out. I'll be the first to come out and say it. It came out much better than I initially thought, dude. What did y'all think about the film?
You know, I thought that movie was badass. You know, I was busy throughout the day. I had little things here and there to do, and then finally, you know, I decided to go ahead and take a break from drawing and doing what I usually do, and this is already like, I think it was about 1:30 in the morning. I was like, okay, it's time to sit down. Me and the wife, we sat down. She grabbed her margarita. I got my snacks and everything.
Did you snap at her, raise your eyebrow, and then point towards the couch? Or like you nodded towards the couch? Come here. Let's go.
Oh, man, there was a lot of
Grab that Thai paste. Come on.
Man, I kid you not, though. Got all the lights off and everything, zoned out on that movie. That thing was great. I loved it. That was an awesome movie, man. Perfect, you know, perfect 1 o'clock in the morning type of movie. Everything's dark, everyone's asleep, and we're just like, let's put on some
that's the best. Something.
Oh yeah, definitely. That whole horror scene, the feeling and everything, that was great. Yeah, I love this movie though.
Chris, what's your first, you know, thoughts on everything when you put it on or whatever the fuck, when you got to watch it in full? Because we ended up watching almost half of it together at my brother's, but his Roku started fucking up, so we didn't get to finish watching it, which, you know, I was cool with, but I ended up watching it by myself afterwards. It was during the day. I bet you if I put this on, because I'm usually with my dogs and they distract me or whatever, I bet you I put this on in one of my other rooms and just sit there. It'll probably freak me out because it has like a lot of Evil Dead-ish kind of feel, you know, feeling in the beginning. But I'll let Chris. Yeah. What did you think, dude?
To me, it had the same characters and the same type of event story going on as the Conjuring movies and the previous two. But you know what it was, though? At the end of the day, it just has that made for paid streaming service movie kind of feel, like, you know, and you know I love The Irishman, but even The Irishman, as much as I love it, has this too. Like, it's too long of a movie with too much going on, like, and there's so much different events going on, and like it kind of in a way becomes a completely different movie because you know, you go from this place to this place to this character, that character, that character. It's not like where the other two are a lot more confined. They're a lot more concentrated. They're in one house, one location for the most part, mm-hmm. and one group of people, you know, that are always within proximity of each other. But they're going all over the place. It wasn't an easy story to follow for the first hour and a half, really. And once you get to around an hour 20-something, then everything really lines up, comes together, and then boom. And once you get to that hour 20-something, great. Then you're into it, and you're like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. Let's beat this fucking bitch. But it's just... yeah, it's just like... It takes an hour 28 to concentrate your heat, your energy, your empathy to a cause.
This film feels kind of like broken up a lot more than the other ones. Like, I'm not gonna, like, the other ones, like, I think the first one's, like, really scary, you know? The second one, it's a lot more fun. This one, I enjoyed the story a lot more once we get to the part that I found interesting, was the whole totem kind of thing. I think that, yeah, the beginning of the film, like you said, like, they could have, like, I don't know, I'm not a director, I'm not a writer, but, like, if they would have condensed that a little bit more, because I felt like they really focused on the Warrens a lot on this film than they did, like, on the other two. Like, this film felt really involved with them towards
yes.
the middle on forward to where, you know, Arnie, right, he's getting the exorcism and, like, we kind of care, but we're more focused on the Warrens towards the end. And I like that. I was like, well, fuck, I like this whole there's a witch, because anything that has to do with witchcraft, I start freaking out, dude, because, you know, if you I don't care who you are, you open your door and you see, like, chicken bones or something by your front, you know, your front door, you're like, oh, shit, you know, what the fuck's going on here, right? But I agree with that. But, Gabe, do you have anything to say about this film kind of being – I don't think it was too long at all. I thought it was perfect. It felt like there was a lot going on, but, I mean, I was okay with it. I like the Warren part, though, the most, but –
yeah, like, as far as this movie goes, like, honestly, I agree with Chris. This movie was, like, a little bit all over the place, but there was a good reason for that. As it jumped around, the whole thing just became more of a, like, a rush in time. Like, the whole point of this was to try to save, Arnie Johnson, who was the target of all this. He ended up becoming a target where he ended up murdering someone, and they ended up the Warrens were trying to be there to help him. But the whole point was that when Arnie was caught by the police and he has to go to court, it's really his only defense was that, you know, he was possessed. And that's where the Warrens are trying to investigate, they're trying to understand, you know, they're trying to get some kind of proof to help him so he won't go to the death chamber. I think they said they were going to send him to the gas chamber. But they're trying to give, the only way they can really defend him if to really kind of prove that it was demonic possession is that they need some type of evidence. So the whole thing ends up becoming jumping around from, you know, I think it's from Danvers, Massachusetts, down to all the way to Connecticut, where it goes down to the Warrens' house, their home. It just kind of jumps all over the place. You're right. But honestly, I think this movie made for something pretty good in comparison to the other three. You're right. For the first two, they were all there at their house, that they were at one spot because there's a haunting. This one is not a haunting. This one is occult Satanism. Yeah. That they're not being haunted by a ghost, but more of a curse. And what makes this, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what makes this movie great is that it's not just ghosts in comparison to part one and two. part three is not just ghosts that are you should be threatened by, it's people. And in this movie, this is basically what's conjuring up the demons and the monsters and the ghosts and the paranormal. It's because there's an occult Satanism, you know, depending on how much you believe in, you know, that kind of, you know, devil worshiping, that if curses and stuff like that are real, you know, that's what this movie is. This movie is going after. You think this whole time in the beginning you're watching like some kind of ghost. I thought I was watching a ghost, another ghost haunting, like, you know, part one and part two, because it starts off with the house. You're seeing exorcisms going on. You know, you're seeing all kinds of crazy, you know, things flipping. There's claws going against the wall. Well, then after a while, you're trying to wonder, like, well, how is this Arnie Johnson going to get out of court? I mean, he murdered someone and no one believes, no one's going to believe that the devil made him do it.
No one believes a landlord story, right, Chris?
I don't. Most people don't. I did, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, and, well, just like I said, it's just, that's just kind of like what this movie is. It's more of a rush, and it's the mystery, like, what's causing all this. It's not, you find out it's not ghosts, there's Satanism, there's cult leaders, or cult people involved in this. It's just, it's thrilling. It has a little bit of mystery. It does jump a little bit over, but it gives, because of how much action and how much, you know, kind of suspense there is, it kind of gives you a reason to kind of pay attention a little more. And I think what captivated me more throughout this movie was like trying to figure out how is he going to get out of this mess. I don't think he is. I mean, all sane people, you know, they're always thinking like, no, there's no demonic possession. America always believes that there's any kind of happens to be any type of demonic possession, America's quick to believe there's mental disability, bad structure in the home, personal illness, anything else that makes sense. They believe in God, but they don't believe that the devil can actually make you bad.
And America at this time in 1981, it's that kind of real upright, straight-laced conservative society. I don't mean Republican, but I mean conservative as in like socially conservative society. And like, oh, don't say the devil made you do it. You had a choice. You chose to do it. Like, that's the way people were back then.
Yes, definitely. I definitely agree with you on that. They are very headstrong, and they really believed, you know, you do this, this is what happens. You know, this is the consequences. And in, like you said, during that time, this was during the 80s, and they really believed, you know, you stabbed a person, you were pissed off, you were drunk, you were on drugs, that you did it. No, I was, you know, the devil made me do it. Yeah, good one. More of them lies.
Comedy act in the 60s, like the Carruthers brothers, Smothers brothers, something, and one of them was like, I didn't, the devil made me do it.
Well, this is the first Conjuring without James Wan directing it, and this is the second franchise we actually fulfilled, you know, if you don't count the other fucking spinoffs with it that we finished with Gabe here. So there's still, like, of course, The Nun, The Annabelles. We'll get all to, you know, I think I talked about it last time. We'll get all to those, but I'm glad we did the Conjuring films. I did notice that there wasn't as many crazy-ass jump scares as there normally is in a Conjuring film, because, you know, like, the first two, there's a ton. I don't know if there was too many here at all, but all I know is when I saw that little, like, that totem, like you said, it's a thriller. Like, for real, once I saw that, I was like, oh, shit. And, like, you wanted to figure out, you know, where's she at? And I was like, of course, I always watch these films, and I'll listen to reviews to kind of get, like, if I miss something or, you know, whatever. And I heard somebody, they were saying, was this this witch, you know, like the priest, the father's. So, like, the whole thing with him is that he ended up having a child with some woman, and then she died in, you know, childbirth, so he kept her, like, a secret and whatever. And I guess he kind of was studying the occult, and then, like, there was, like, kind of a connection with the Ram, which is connects to the Annabelle series, like the whole cult of the Ram or whatever. But
Father Kastner.
Yeah, that's the one. But they were saying was this the occultist, I guess, you know, whatever. I don't know what she – I don't know if they gave her a name, but it was the witch, you know.
Yeah, they called her Isla. That was the – he said the name of his child was Isla. He had a child, and like you said, she died during birth, but he was a priest, and he said it was against their Catholic church for them to, I guess, be having kids.
Yeah.
So he had – so he kept her in he raised her in secret. So yeah, her name he named the child Isla, so that's how you figured out what that lady's name.
Yeah, I stepping on that because I remember like hearing this when I was watching this. He actually had this marital relationship and there was a sexual relationship and the child before he was ordained. Oh. So he didn't violate any priesthood regulation. It's just that even that, just the mere fact that he had a child at all. Back in the it's different now. Today you can be a single father and you can apply for the even in the Latin rite, which is the one that's like no married, you know, blah blah. Even there they'll take you today. But back then, just the fact that you even had a child, even if your wife was dead, you know, they wouldn't take you. So he had to keep her a secret so he could become a priest.
On that point was to me with all her like witchcraft, I thought she was like a like some like. She was like kind of like what's that, Voldemort, with where he has these things and like the Cruxes or whatever they call them, right? I was like, I thought Harry Potter is that she was dead and these things were like keeping her alive or something like that. That's why she had that little whatever you call it, the giant totem in the bottom of the father's house or whatever in the things. And then someone was saying like, no, I thought she was still alive and she was just hiding down there. Did y'all, was she, I mean, from y'all's perspective, I thought she was just like, because she was like floating around coming out of like nowhere. She was in different dimensions when they're in the fucking morgue. Lorraine touches the dead body, she's like morphs. Yeah. And she's, I'm like, so I'm like, she has to be like a spirit, right, or something.
Yeah,
but
that's what I interpreted.
Gabe, did you see anything different, or what? Or what?
No, that's what I said towards the beginning of the movie when we were watching this whole thing happen. I kind of got the idea because that there was like some kind of paranormal activity. I thought it was a haunting, and then. Well, then later on, you start realizing that it was someone doing that, that there was a curse. So I thought at some point or another, I thought it was just a haunting, even though they said, like, oh, someone's placed a curse on this family. And I was like, well, if they placed a curse, but there's a ghost going around, someone's doing something, or someone's got to help her. So I honestly thought that lady, when she popped up during the beginning, I honestly thought she was the ghost.
Yeah.
But apparently, like you said, she's pulling some Harry Potter shit, and she's, you know, she's flinging some blood in her little goblet, and she's saying some spells and stuff like that for the Calvary of the Dominion, or some evil hell spiders, who knows what,
bats
flying around, and all of a sudden she's like somewhere else, and she's like making shit, she's making people do shit that they weren't supposed to be doing.
That's the thing, and she just appears, like what's his name, Arnie Johnson in that house, he looks after the cereal spills, and he looks through the hole in the wall, he turns around, and there she is. Or he's cutting the fucking tree, and he looked, and that was the thing seemed to creep me out the most, because, like, I those are the things I used to think about as a kid, or whatever, early adult, whatever. Like, you know, you'd look through a window, you know, at an odd time, and see some person you weren't supposed to see, that would creep the fuck out of me. And that happened to him when he's up there with a fucking chainsaw, and drops the fucking chainsaw, almost kills one of his coworkers. Like, so yes, I thought she was some demonic spirit who just appears and teleports when she wants to, like someone that doesn't look at their phone for 40 minutes before a podcast, like that. But
that's a zombie, dude. That's completely different. That's a zombie, dude. Post quesadilla, dude. So.
Like that? No, exactly. Or someone watching an Al Pacino movie and his wife thinks that I was talking about him acting blind on the set as opposed to being funny on the set. But no, but that's the thing, like. I thought she was a spirit, and I mean, it makes sense that she could, because if she's the daughter of that priest, and if he's alive, well, sure, she could be alive too, but how the fuck is she just like, I just, That took a while to connect, that she's a living, actual person doing this shit.
So,
there's so much in this movie you don't connect till the end.
So that's what I'm asking. Like, I still think she was a spirit. Are you telling me that she was actually, like, a person? Because towards the end, I was really confused when, like, you promised the demon a spirit or a vessel or whatever, and then she looked all fucked up, like Ray, dude, just, you know, like, I started laughing. I was like, what the fuck happened to her? So I'm like, was she, like, yeah, well, go ahead, dude. Well, no clue.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, at some point or another in that movie, I remember them saying that she made a deal with the demon. She made a deal with the demon because the reason why she got it all hooked on this whole occult Satanism thing is because of her dad. Her dad was investigating and doing stuff for the church, investigating these cults like the Ram. The Ram is this Satanism cult. So he was, well, not only was he investigating the cult, but he was bringing it home, and then he got his daughter hooked on it. So, you know, and they ended up explaining, saying, well, you know, you got to watch out what you're fascinated with, because usually the kids kind of follow not too far from the tree. And so what happened was, because he was investigating all this, the daughter got kind of hooked on it. She started getting a little interested. Before you know it, she just kind of fell into it, and she started, you know, doing her own little worshiping thing. So later on, at some point or another, I remember them saying that she made a deal with the demon, and the curses, they ended up bringing this Southern European witchcraft book from another cult, and they were Ed Warren was reading the book, and he ends up saying, oh, this is a curse that they're doing. She has to go ahead and kill, she has to go ahead and sacrifice or kill three people. She has to kill someone young, the lover, and the man of God. So basically, in the beginning of the movie, it's David Glatzel, and it goes to Arnie Johnson, who's the lover because he's in love with David Glatzel's older sister. So there's him, and then the man of God would be Ed Warren. They end up chasing after him during the movie. But anyways, she was supposed to bring three sacrifices for that demon, whatever the contract was or whatever deal she made. If she didn't make those sacrifices, her soul would have to be sacrificed. Well, the first one was the little boy was just like a target, not a target. He was more of a like kind of a bait and reel. They're harassing him in the beginning because they really wanted Arnie Johnson. They wanted the lover. Now, the young one, they already got. She already succeeded. There was a girl that got stabbed 22 times. Her name was Jessica. No. Friend, and basically they were part of this whole situation, and because of this whole occult, and Jessica ends up getting thrown in, she ends up committing suicide by throwing herself in the river. She doesn't do it by choice, it's that Satanism cult lady Isla who ends up making her do it. So she ends up dying. Later on, the Warrens end up coming in, and they need more information on this totem because they find out it's a curse. So what do they do? They go to the police. They go to the police department and they tell them, "Hey, you know, what can you tell us about this?" "Oh, well, we have information on that totem. That's great. Give it to us." "We can't." "Why?" "Well, I'm here. I have to investigate a missing persons, and it has to do with this totem. Why don't you give us your information?" Mm-hmm. "Tell you what, why don't we help each other out? We're trying to figure out to help someone that's already in trouble. You know, we need more information on this totem. You have information. I'll help you out with your missing persons thing." "Oh, what can you do?" "Oh, I can go ahead and perceive, you know, she kind of like perceives time, I guess, she gets like premonitions and stuff like that. So she's able to, like, with touch and feeling, she's able to see things that, like, with a third eye that other normal people can't. So they go ahead and give her a test. She passed the test. They end up taking her out to where the murder ended up happening. And she's having all these visions and all this stuff. And she ends up becoming right. They start reliving that whole experience. So that whole movie scene is just, it's real bloody, kind of intense. You know, they really going at it. Anyways, they follow the tracks to where this lady ends up throwing herself off a cliff into this, to like this kind of lake river kind of deal. And the police officers end up finding the body. So she actually ends up right. They give her the information on the totem. So it starts snowballing from there. But they realize they need more information. So guess what happens? They're all like, "Well, since this girl was involved, let's go ahead and go to the morgue. And let's go ahead and see if we can see that dead body." Well, it's closing time. You know, they don't know who they can talk to, but they need information fast. So they end up breaking into this morgue. They end up finding the body that the police ended up recovering. So they go end up in touching the Lorraine Warren ends up touching the darn body, and she ends up starts experiencing things that, well, she's not supposed to be experiencing, seeing. And that's how she ends up finding out that she saw the face of this lady. She ends up getting information and stuff like that, you know, from this dead body. Well, this is where more creepy stuff ends up happening. And that's where one of the dead bodies ends up coming back to life, starts attacking them. I don't know. What did you guys think about that dead body part?
The thing with me is that that's one of the main criticisms I have about this film is that the other ones, they had Annabelle, you know, they had all these great characters, and this one, they had the fat guy in the morgue, and I was like, what the fuck, you know, they had Bill Wilkins, the nun, and all these things, and I was just like, they could have come up with a little bit better character, because they didn't. There was no real demons that we saw, kind of like an Insidious film and shit like that. So that was kind of, you know, disappointing to me that they didn't have a real big extra character that stood out. They just had the fat guy and shit like that. But that was my take on that. I love the whole that Lorraine's able to see. Like, you know, because they've always kind of done that thing with the Amityville intros and shit like that. But this is really cool to actually see her, like, touch the body and actually go through seeing what's going on with everything. And then going to, like, the woods and seeing where that one, like you said, that one girl stabbed the other one. But it was because of the demon. So all that was really cool to see. But I just wish they would have had more memorable, you know, extras in there, I guess. But... CJ?
Yeah, I mean, is it just me? Can I just point this out as you're saying, like, listening to all these people? A couple things, a couple observations. Because I have this movie playing, like, at a mute volume as we're talking about this. Am I the only one that thought to themselves, man, for a small town Connecticut in 1981, they sure have a lot of black police officers. Like, that lead detective they worked with midway through the film... And then the cop that pulls over Arnie Johnson after he first gets possessed.
Yeah, well, I think that has to do more with the way times are running right now.
Right now, exactly. That's what I'm getting at.
Everything's starting to be a little more diverse, which is a good thing. I I think we shouldn't have to be at that point to where we notice that there's a lot of African Americans. We should just say, hey, there's people here. But because of how America was run from back then up to now, I mean, there is a big difference, and it's fun how.
And I'm all for inclusion. I'm all for diversity. Also, that's fine. But that's fine. But if this is a true to life story, this is something that supposedly actually happened in 1981. So, you know, you might have a small town in Connecticut with black police officers today, but in 1981, I guarantee you didn't. Now, in 1981, you only had black cops in the big cities.
Well, I understand what you're saying about it, but like this film, like they took like a little idea and they just did everything else. They made up all the rest of the shit. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't notice it, but yeah, I would say it is kind of funny. Yeah, there's a lot of black.
The other thing about that too is, do you notice that David Glatzel and certain scenes with Patrick Wilson or Ed Warren are the only two characters in the movie that look 1981?
Yeah, their sense of style and like how they carry themselves. Yeah, I kind of see that. You know, it's funny though if you think about that. Just like the other two movies. This movie says it's based off a true story, but again, at the same time, I mean, it's only so much truth to this movie. Now, in real life, the real Arnie Johnson, when they were how this ended up happening was that he ended up getting charged with manslaughter. And he ended up only serving 4 or 5 years in prison. Mm-hmm. Now what I was reading was that it wasn't so much that the idea behind this is because they ended up showing that they were trying to use the devil as their defense case, saying the devil made him do it. But the problem was that, you know, the judge wasn't buying it, trying to make the court believe that. They're saying one of the quotes that they were saying in there was that, well, everybody swears under God and under oath. We can, but how far are they going to go and believe that, you know, the devil actually did? You can't just believe one side without believing the other. That was pretty much their whole argument. So what was neat, what I was reading about was that it wasn't so much that the judge said, I'm going to give you manslaughter for this to serve for 4 years in prison. It was the jury. They ended up convincing the jury that, hey, the devil really did make him do it. And so they were the ones who ruled, you know, in favor of that, not the judge. It didn't seem like he even really believed any of that. But, of course, you go with the jury and you just kind of roll with it. You know, that's the people's choice.
So I've started reading today, earlier today, I started reading the Wikipedia page on this trial, which began October 20-something of 81. It was only like a 30-day trial, and he got convicted on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So did the DA push for murder one or murder two, but then the jury said, we convict, but not for that. We're convicting with this charge?
Yeah, that I'm not sure on. I was just reading more or less like on I'm not sure exactly what they were pushing for. I just ended up reading that that's what happened. The guy, Arnie Johnson, ended up also saying that he wasn't possessed by the devil. That was also he said this was more of a fabrication of the movie. And he even filed a lawsuit against the Warrens. Ended up saying that, you know, this was all more publicity. This is all. But it didn't say anything about him not, you know, pushing for that while in court, because of course, you know, you murdered someone. These people are trying to defend you. Why are you going to push that? I wasn't possessed. What are you all lying about?
Is he openly saying, no, I was just pissed off at Alan Bono for dancing with my girlfriend in the bedroom?
I guess so. And, like I said, he was claiming that he wasn't possessed by the devil. There was situations and there was tapes like the exorcism and stuff like that went on. But again, they're only going so far as to say, you know, this is true and this is not. But the movie is saying differently, saying I understand they have to go a little above and beyond to make it a little more flashy, so it won't be just a plain and flat out just like documentary. Nobody really wants to. Some people like documentaries, but not everybody. And they needed to make this a little more flashy. So like,
for sure,
yeah, Arne Johnson being possessed and floating in the air while in prison and everything. Yeah, that didn't happen. But you know, as far as like the court case and all that. You know, he said that all that really did happen. He did get the manslaughter. He served. He married his wife. What was it, Debbie? While he was in prison, that really did happen. He's still married today, but at some point or another, later on, he ended up. I guess due to the media and all that, he ended up filing a lawsuit against the Warrens, saying no. That's false. I wasn't possessed. So, wow.
What a piece of shit.
I think he even wrote a book about it too. But
you know what's interesting here? I'm reading about this again because I had the Wikipedia page up from earlier.
Oh, so, okay.
Like the movie shows you that it's just Alan Bono, the landlord, kennel landlord, whatever, dancing in the bedroom, and her and him are just having a good time and smiling and dancing the music and all this stuff. No, in reality, what happened was. He, like, you know how they show you he drops the chainsaw at his job because he sees the, what's her name, Isla?
Right.
Okay, so he basically leaves work because he's fucking up. He's not feeling good. He goes back to their house, that apartment, that kennel, whatever.
Okay.
The landlord takes them out to lunch to a pizza place. They come home and they get, and everyone starts drinking. And then he, the landlord, this Alan Bono guy, the long-haired, you know, 2015 Chris Karam looking guy. He right. fucking he grabs what's the name the sister Mary, I think her name is Mary, the one that's older than David Gretzel.
Right. Billy.
Biscuits, mummy biscuits. But no, but he grabs her and he won't let her go. And what's his name, Arne Johnson's like, "No, that's my girlfriend. She don't want you to touch her. Let her go." And he won't let her go. And that's what led to the killing.
Oh, see, I didn't read any of that part. I was just reading more or less like the kind of ending result on this. Like I said, I think this guy even wrote a book about the whole situation or everything that happened. Now, again, like you just kind of take this movie for, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. I mean, watch it to enjoy it. Not so much as like, okay, well. It says it's a true story, but you go ahead and pick and choose. Like,
it's not like the JFK movie where you're trying to say what really happened and what's here and there. What, you know? Yeah, Chris is like, "Dude, well, time out here. God dang it, this Conjuring 3 is full of shit."
If I had read about this, now that I've seen the movie, and now that I've, after seeing the movie, read about the trial, I'm more interested in the movie. Now, I would watch this again and be more interested the next go-round. Because I know more about it and it makes a lot more sense. But if you're some newbie that hasn't read a damn thing about this, and you just watch this for the first time, it's a 2-hour movie that's all over the place.
So, the fucking Conjuring, dude. I mean, I'll go first this time with the whole rating thing, dude. I really enjoyed this film, dude. It's one of the ones that that I can watch a lot, you know, quite a few times. I agree, had its problems, but I just like the fun aspect. I like the witchcraft or whatever the fuck aspect of it. The other ones, of course, they're more memorable because they've been around for a while. You know, 2013, I think, and 2016. So I mean, it's been a while. And this one, when it first came out. When I first watched it, the first kind of 20 minutes, I was like, I like this whole Evil Dead thing, but it looks kind of generic. But once we hit that whole, there's the, like, that crazy looking, like, it looked like a cup, you know, that totem thing, I was hooked. I was like, okay, this thing's very interesting. And the whole kind of thriller aspect where they're kind of, like, against time and trying to get everything figured out, I really enjoyed it from that point on. So for me, I'm going to have to give this motherfucker like a 7.8 out of 10. I liked it a lot. Not as much as the other ones, but it's still so damn new that I am going to end up watching it a few more times because it's on HBO, right? HBO Max, before they take it off and all that bullshit. But it's a fun film, dude. So
yeah. It's on HBO Max. It's also in theater. For the record, they spent $38 million on this movie as a budget, and it's already at the box office. At the box office, made $50 million.
And no one's, I mean, not no one, but not too many people are going out there to watch movies. Can you imagine if this came out during the regular period? It'd be like fucking doing amazing, I think.
Yeah.
It was funny, man. I ended up, I saw a little tidbit is that they had to cut one of the scenes so they can go ahead and show it for, there's an alternate, there's like an alternate scene for the suicide scene in here that they did in Britain. They took that whole part out where he cuts his wrists. Arnie Johnson ends up cutting his wrist in here because of the whole cult Satanism thing. That curse is like got him pretty good, so he's trying to kill himself with a piece of glass. Yeah, they did an alternate scene, or they cut it out for the theater release over there in Britain. I thought that was pretty neat. I was like, oh man, that got too intense for those people.
Yeah, no shit. But Chris, what do you rate this motherfucker, and you know, give it like a, you know, your overall, you know, thoughts on this shit?
I'm gonna agree with your 7.8 out of 10. And honestly, because here's the thing, like, I liked Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2, just the movie by themselves, without reading anything in the background of the movies or what they're based on. Mm-hmm. And I like those movies, and I like Paranormal anyway. But it had the right feel for what it was supposed to be, and it kept you engaged, and you're following it, and you're directing your right mental energies in the right ways. Here, you can't do that because it's just so, like we were saying earlier, it's all over the fucking place. Now, after having seen it, and after having read about what these based on, then yeah, I can enjoy a lot more now. So the next time I watch this, I'm going to like it a lot more. I'm going to follow it a lot better. It's going to make a lot more sense to me. But if you're just a Joe Blow, ordinary first-time watcher, doesn't know a damn thing about any of this, and the only reason you went to watch is because you're going off the reputation of the first two, it isn't that great of a movie. The way it's presented, the way it's put together, the way the story flows, the way they follow characters, any of that. You cannot direct your empathy, and you cannot direct your heat in the right ways the majority of the time, the way you're supposed to be able to for a movie like this. Now, it's the same thing with, like you know, like Conjuring 1 and 2 had good reputations. They did well. So Insidious 1, 2, and 3 did well, and they were good movies. So, of course, people are going to go see the fourth one, right? And the fourth one sucked. It's like the WrestleMania Mark went to in Dallas at Jerry World. 94,000 people in that fucking building. And was there 94,000 people in that building because the characters and storylines were so fucking great at that time? Fuck no. It's because of the reputation, because it's WWE. And the brand. And the reputation. And same thing here.
All right, Gabe, what do you give this bad boy? I was going to talk about something. Oh, I liked how this film ended compared to the other ones, because I liked the other films, you know, a lot. But I didn't like, I talked about it last time, I didn't like the endings too much. This one, I love, like, the endings and everything, like when they're doing the map thing, and they're like, oh, it's over here, it's by a train tracks, and they're like, oh my god, and he finds out it's the father that should be there and all that. So I thought that this ending was actually better than the other ones. The other ones had really good intros, so like a reversal on this one. But go ahead, Gabe, I don't want to steal your spotlight there.
You're all right. I love this movie, honestly. Like I had mentioned to you guys before, you know about this movie, I would probably put this one first, like probably more watchable. I would watch this one, I would watch part one, and then, like I said, I would follow up with part two, just because, you know, every time I watch part one.
You don't like part two because it has Billy.
It was all
Bobby.
Yeah, I know, all of them biscuits. You know, it was all right. It wasn't a bad movie. Like I said, I feel like I need to watch it. Just, you know, it just goes along with it. Why not? But honestly, I think I just favor this one more, only because it's newer to me right now. Mm-hmm. It just came out. You know, I like the whole Conjuring universe. You know, so I'm more kind of invested into this than
the others.
Than the other ones, because the other ones have already been out, what, since 2013? So, and the other one started popping up along this one. am all so I'm going to give my straight up 8.5 only because I'm really into it right now. If you were ask me about a year or 2 years later, I'll probably give it an 8 or something like that, or maybe a 7.5. But right now, 8.5, I'm giving it. It's pretty neat. I enjoyed it. I like the chase, and I like the fact that it's not just a haunting. It's they changed the villain, and the villain is, you know, cults, Satanism. I like that. It's something different. It's, but it's still the Conjuring universe. So I hope they continue on with this. And, well, not just with this, but I mean just continue on with more stories. I like to see more of these Conjuring things. These are good movies. I like these.
Yeah.
They're fun.
No, exactly. No, I always bring up, like, my love for Hellraiser Inferno, you know, because it's like I understand exactly what you're saying, like, and, you know, what, you know, so, like, I'll say, like, The Conjuring 1 and 2, they are better movies, but I enjoyed this one more just because it's, like you said, maybe because it's new. I love the totem in this thing. I like the characters in the other one, but this one, I just have a lot of fun with it. I can just watch it, you know what I mean, without being scared, quote-unquote scared, right? This one is just like a good movie, and I enjoy it to where I can just put it on and enjoy it. Not, oh, it's got to have, like, this one's good even if it's not Halloween, you know what I mean? It's just, or, you know, or not trying to get scared. Like, you just put it on at night, you have a whole lot of fun. So I get that for sure. And, you know, Hellraiser 1, 2, they may be like these movies that everyone's like, oh, this is all crazy. Like, yeah, it is, but I like Hellraiser Inferno like a fucking weirdo. So that's cool, dude, you know, that you enjoy it, that you enjoy this film. More than the first two, because a lot of people are like, they would say, like, I've heard people say, oh, the second Conjuring was better than the first, and I'm like, well, I mean, they're all kind of about the same for me. I can't really pick a favorite just because the other ones, like I said, they're more dark, but this one is just a better film for me. But we could talk about The Conjuring all day. We'll talk about more of David Wan stuff and more of The Conjuring universe when we get to the next film, whatever we decide to do, probably do the Annabelle series once we come back to it. But I hope you guys,
you're thinking about David Tran, aren't you? Because you call James Wan David Wan.
Did I say it? Oh yeah, James Wan. All right, well, fuck it. I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll see you on the next one.
Man, you gotta be shitting me. That mother's strong.
Peace.
Adios.